for 3 minutes for testimony. And we'll start with the confirmation hearing for Teresa Sager Alba for the Board of Game. Next, we're going to go to SJR 22, Federal Preemption of Salmon Management, then HJR 25, Hydroelectric Power, HJR 27, State Sovereignty, House Bill 14, regarding the Alaska Malamute as State Dog, HCR 10, opposing federal control of state land and water. And so without further ado, we'll go ahead and hear from Teresa Sager Alba. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can. If you could go ahead and put your name on the record and tell us why you want to be on the Board of Game.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Teresa Sager Alba. I live in the Mintasa Pass area and have lived here for about the past 25 years. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. In terms of a little bit of personal background, when I was young, I learned hunting and fishing from family members. My siblings and I all participated in fishing, and we were taught a lot about that by our parents and grandparents. It was very much a family activity, so it's definitely a part of my background and continues to be. And our family spent a great deal of time in the outdoors, and we still do. We have a family cabin in the interior, and it's a very, really very special place to us. We still gather there and spend a lot of time there, and have great opportunities there for hunting and fishing. So it really provided a great childhood background for me. In terms of my work history, for about the first 12 or 13 years of my professional life, I worked as a legislative staffer for some of the members of the Interior delegation. And I did that until 1995. And then at that time, I had an opportunity to go to work for my neighbor, who had just started an engineering and construction management business. And I have worked for him for the past 13 years. That company is Summit Consulting Services, and we design and manage construction projects in remote villages in Alaska. In terms of my personal endeavors, I've devoted quite a bit of my free time as a volunteer to a number of organizations that are primarily dedicated to wildlife conservation and to protecting Alaskan outdoor heritage, hunting, fishing, trapping, use of the outdoors. And I really feel that it's important for youth in particular to have a chance to connect with their natural environment and to learn resource stewardship. So I have put my volunteer efforts toward those sorts of endeavors. And so I feel like my background has given me, I think this is kind of a logical transition for me to have an opportunity to serve as a member of the Board of Game. I think that my background has provided a pretty good basis for continuing to work to provide good outdoor and wildlife use opportunities for the public. And so I appreciate the committee's consideration of my appointment, and I'd be glad to answer any questions when that time comes up.
Okay, thank you, Teresa. We appreciate your testimony. Questions for the conferee at this time? Okay, we'll go ahead and take public testimony. And as I said before, I'm going to go ahead and put the three-minute clock in place. And so we'll go first to Mr. David Kramer. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. My name is David Kramer. I own and operate Summit Consulting Services. I am Teresa's employer. We have three offices, one here in the Mintasa Pass, Polk area, one in Fairbanks, and one in Anchorage. And as she mentioned, we design and construct remote sewer and water infrastructure projects throughout the state. I've known Teresa since she began to live in the area. I've known her well for the last 15 years. And I found her to be not only a very good and conscientious employee, but also a person with a very well-balanced approach to everything she does, to include her her beliefs and views about the outdoors. I think she would make an excellent addition to the board game, and I completely support her efforts to do that. And you know, as a company and a company owner, we support that in a way that includes making ourselves as flexible as we need to be to accommodate Teresa's schedule to carry out her duties with the board. I personally have lived in this area for nearly 40 years, and also, of course, have a strong rural Alaska tie and extent across the state, and of course, our focus way to this region. Our view of the state is pretty global, and I think Teresa's is as well, and I think she would just make an excellent addition to the board. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Okay, next we're going to go to Sue Ensminger.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I also have known Teresa for close to 26 years, and I know her as a very gentle person with a kindness that she will listen to all the users, and I feel that she has high moral standards. She's been a persistent user, both in fish and game, and she understands the lifestyle of the people in rural Alaska, and she's also grew up in the Fairbanks area, where she also understands the lifestyle of urban Alaska. And I think that she has ability to look at the entire situation, of all the decisions that she has to make, and she will hear all sides. She has the ability to look at all aspects of each problem that comes up, and I think she would be a great person for making decisions for the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Sue. Questions? Okay, hearing and seeing none, we'll come back here then to the room to Mr. Ron Somerville. Welcome to Senate Resources.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Ron Somerville. I live here in Juneau, and I've spent many years up here, but generally working with you people, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I just want to also talk on behalf of Teresa. I've known her since she was working up here as a staff member. I was working in the Department of Fish and Game at the time, and I looked on her as a very able, you know, willing participant. She always was even kind to us people in the bureaucracy, so I appreciated that. One thing I wanted to stress, and I know there's a lot of things going around the halls here, but one of the things that when we looked at Teresa's appointment, and I supported Dick Burley as well. He was from Fairbanks, but Teresa's from the interior, and she understands, like we felt, if they're going to replace Dick, it was a good replacement, because somebody who, in essence, had the knowledge, had the ability to look at things in her area and their area, if you will. And people on the board, I've served on the board for 5 years, you do rely a lot on the local person for input on issues. I mean, that's where you go to. If a person there is familiar with the subsistence issues or the methods and means issues or some particular problem. And she's demonstrated her ability to do that. Even though board members try to be fair at all times, they still are influenced, if you will, by friends, neighbors, and their experiences. And I felt that she was a good replacement if they were going to replace Mr. Burley. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Huggins.
Just one question. What was Teresa's capacity with the department?
Oh, she wasn't. She was working as a staff member up here.
Okay. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
As she testified, I think for about 12 years, she was working with some of the members from the interior.
Okay. Thank you.
Looks like the House CNRA committee secretary with under Representative Mike Miller, and then legislative secretary to Representative Ringstad. Wow, there's quite a few things there. So 1983 to 1995 on her resume. Okay, next, Mr. Rod Arno. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, committee members, thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify before you. My name is Rod Arno. I'm from Palmer. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. And I've worked with Teresa on board of game issues for over a decade. And in her capacity as a member, a board member of the Alaska Outdoor Council, while I was the representative before the board of game. And her knowledge of the process going in for someone who has not been a board member before was clearly shown at this last board meeting. She was able to come right in as a first-time board member and was very effective, I think, as a board member on that. One of the individual characteristics that we really appreciate of all board members, be it fisheries or game, is being personable and allowing the public to see that this process is really open to them and feel like that they have representation that they can approach. Teresa is real approachable, and she does listen open-mindedly, and I think that that's, as far as legitimizing the whole board process, I think that is extremely high value. So I appreciate her for that. Her attention to detail is extremely important on all these issues. The other thing is her knowledge of the Constitution and of the statutes. Actually, quite a few of the senators that she was worked for as a staffer, you know, were instrumental in quite a few of the statutes now that affect the management on the Board of Game. So her knowledge of those statutes or that deal with game management is real extensive, and I think that she will try to follow the legislature's wishes that, you know, in past legislation that they passed in order to do, to meet the constitutional requirement for developing and utilizing renewable resources on a sustained use basis, and the common use clause is extremely important to her. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arno. Appreciate your testimony. Questions? Okay, next we're going to go to Anchorage and start with Andy Josephson. And if again, if you could put your name on the record, who you want to be affiliated with, and you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hoping that you can hear me. This is Andy Josephson.
Yes.
I am president of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, which is the only locally based nonprofit environmental group that advocates for a variety of uses, including the variety of uses for natural resources, including the right to non-consumptive uses of natural resources. My own background, rather briefly, is I'm nearly 45 years old. I was born here in Anchorage just after the earthquake. I have lived in, for extended periods of time, in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, 3 years in Kalskag on the Kuskokwim River, a year and a half in Kotzebue as a state prosecutor, and twice served as a legislative staffer in the 1990 session and the 2003 session. I can't say that I know Ms. Sager Albaugh, and I can't say that I attended the March session where she, as essentially a recess appointee, appeared as a member of the board. I was stuck in Nome for a hearing. I'm an attorney and was in Nome at the time. We did submit comments to the board. And so what I'm presenting to you is admittedly hearsay and would not be admissible in court, but my concerns are what was voiced to me, and that is that she represents not diversity as required under AS 1605-221B. That requires the governor to appoint diversity of interest and points of view in the membership. She represents rather sort of the extreme end of what is already, we view, an extreme policy. Last year, for example, it became known to the public that there was an incident of denning where I believe 8 or 9 wolf pups were killed. And the department, I sensed, was reluctant for the public to know that. And that is now public policy. It's no longer sort of a hidden thing. It's now out front and center, as is a right for some black bear, for example, not to be consumed or used in their entirety, as is bear snaring, as is an expansion of the aerial wolf hunting. The list goes on and on and on. And we just think that there needs to be some balance, at least to make it interesting, if nothing else. I mean, the Board of Directors will do what it does, and we understand that. But with the exception of Mr. Grusendorf out of Sitka, there really isn't any advocate for our point of view. And that's disturbing to us. And we think that, you know, frankly, if the visiting public knew what the policies were, they'd find it very, very disturbing. But yet it's the truth, it's the reality. And so our concern is that Ms. Sager-Albaugh will represent sort of the far reaches on this issue and not see the variety of interests. And again, I don't know her at all, and I'm sure she has wonderful qualities. But I, you know, she spoke to being a good steward of natural resources, and that's just not what's reported to me from a number of sources from the March meeting. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Okay, next we'll go to Wade Willis.
Thank you, Senate Resource Committee and Co-Chair, for allowing me to speak. My name is Wade Willis. I'm the Alaska Representative for Defenders of Wildlife, a nonprofit conservation organization promoting scientific management of Alaska's wildlife resources. I'm a former ADFMG biologist and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist in Alaska, and hold a tourism business for 10 years. Defenders opposes Teresa Sager-Albaugh's confirmation to the Board of Game because she brings extreme unscientific views to Alaska's wildlife management issues and does not offer the type of diverse representation desperately needed on the Board of Game. And we offer the following examples of her extreme agenda. In March, Ms. Albaugh participated in her first Board of Game meeting and provided a clear picture of her views regarding wildlife management. Sager-Albaugh voted to expand aerial hunting of wolves into Denali State Park. She never considered or discussed the cost of tourism industry, nor did she address the fact that the Division of Parks and Recreation prefers that predator control not be conducted in her park. She also voted to allow the use of helicopters by private citizens to support killing wolves and bears, something Alaskans have vigorously opposed. She voted to allow citizens to be authorized to shoot wolves from helicopters to boost caribou numbers in an already healthy caribou herd, and to allow spotting brown bears using aircraft and landing and shooting them, including if it was sows and cubs. She voted to allow citizens to snare both brown and black bears, a first in Alaska, including sows and cubs, and she voted for the sale and resale of bear parts. Both helicopter use and sale of bear parts were strongly opposed by the Alaska wildlife groupers. All of these votes clearly show her as promoting the most radical and unjustified forms of wildlife management. All of these votes supported changing long-term fundamental wildlife policy in Alaska. Indeed, many are first in Alaska. She's also a past president of the Alaska Outdoor Council from 2005 to 2007 and worked closely with Rod Arno. So then she retains close ties to this group, resigning from the AOC Advisory Board mid-meeting in March. She was also bound to be in conflict of interest for three proposals at the Board of Game meeting and was removed from being able to vote. One of those votes was for customary or community harvest for the committed by the Otman Corporation. So it just shows that her ties to the AOC will make her biased towards amount needed for subsistence findings and customary and traditional use findings. I've submitted my testimony in writing too. There was a little more I wanted to say, but 3 minutes is a little short, so I'll leave my written testimony to fulfill the rest of mine.
Thank you, Wade. Appreciate it. And it was good to see you when you were in Juneau earlier this year.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next we're going to go to Fairbanks and Brian Haley.
Yes, I'm Brian Haley, president of the Chittenden Defenders Association, a 61-year resident of Fairbanks, Alaska. I support Teresa Albright and Sager Albright for confirmation to the Alaska Board of Game. I have worked with Teresa and conservation organizations and know she would make a very good Board of Game member. as she is very knowledgeable in game management issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your brevity. Okay, next, Mr. Ted Morris, Morphis.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to give my testimony. My name is Ted Morphis. I'm a 10-year resident of Fairbanks, Alaska. I've known Teresa for most of that time and have found her to be forthright and honest in her dealings, whether they're private or public. I feel it strongly that she would make a very good board of game member, and the attacks upon her from the other groups are unfounded because they don't know Teresa, and I believe that she does understand the word game management. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else here in the audience wishing to offer testimony in the confirmation hearing of Teresa Sager-Alba? Is there anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close public testimony, which brings the conferee back before us for any further committee discussion or questions. Is there a motion? Senator Huggins.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that Teresa Sager-Alba be moved from committee for further consideration by the full forum.
Is there an objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then Teresa Sager-Alba, thank you very much for being online. We'll go ahead and move your name on to the full body for consideration. Okay, next, we are going to go to SJR 22, Federal Preemption of Salmon Management. Senator Huggins, and we do have a committee substitute that we need a motion on.
Yeah. So moved. That we so adopt backslash version R.
Is there an objection to moving backslash R? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then we do have R before us, and Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I would ask that Ms. Sharon Long come forward.
Yes.
To present the bill. I will just make one general statement that in this case, the United Cook Inlet Drift Association has grabbed the tiger by the tail, and I'll let Sharon Long describe that.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairwoman McGuire and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Long. I'm aide to Senator Huggins. This resolution takes aim at the lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court of Alaska by the United Cook Inlet Drift Association, UCEDA. The complaint by this commercial fishing group calling for a return of federal management is an affront to the state of Alaska. Please don't forget, here in our 50th year of statehood, that it was a colossal failure of federal salmon management that was one of the driving forces behind the statehood movement. I would hope no one wishes to return to such a regime. UCEDA is an association of both resident and non-resident commercial fishers who participate in drift gillnet salmon fisheries in the inlet. Remarkably, these fishers can keep for their personal use an unlimited number of fish from their commercial catch. Their goal is to have the state-managed personal use dipnet fishery declared unconstitutional and preempted by federal law. This resolution seeks a fair shake for Alaskans who fish without commercial gear with simple dip nets to feed their families. It asks the governor to intervene in defense of the state's authority to manage its own fisheries in a responsible manner. And with that,
questions? Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Long, nice to see you here today. I was looking through the copy of the lawsuit that's supplied in the backup. And it's probably not stated there, but maybe you can just tell me where the source is for the whereas clause relating to the desire of the United Cook Inlet Drift Fishermen Drift Association to, is it outlaw the personal, the dip netting? I mean, I'm sorry, I guess I'm losing
yeah.
the.
They claim.
Is that one of their stated objectives or?
Well, they call for relief. And first they claim, if you go to page 18 of 13, They claim that they have been harmed and continue to be harmed by the state regulations pertaining to salmon management in the Cook Inlet. And then when you go back to page 11 of 13, the relief they ask for is to declare that the state-authorized resident-only salmon fisheries in Cook Inlet are unconstitutional and therefore preempted by federal law.
I would call that black and white. Thank you.
There's more.
I don't mean to interrupt you. Okay. I hadn't seen that paragraph, and I thank you.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Just a couple notes. I think my neighbors and many of my friends have been very tolerant over the piece of where you live and how you get to fish.
Yeah.
And we know, we've talked about it. On the Salmon Task Force, there was a sizable number of people that are commercial fishermen that fish in Cook Inlet. Some of those are residents, some are non-residents. And, quite frankly, if you were rod and reel fishermen, you'd say they have no limit sort of thing, almost. And the fact that this same group of people are now saying to my neighbors at DIPNET that we want to preempt you because our people that are non-residents mm-hmm. can't go dip fish. There's something wrong with that. And hence is why I say they've got a tiger by the tail.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Senator Wagner.
Give a little more background history. I hope somebody that's more familiar with this than I am gets online and explains it a little more. In the first place, this didn't start out as a lawsuit. It started out as a petition to the Secretary of Commerce. And I'm not even sure that USITA petitioned the Secretary of Commerce as much as an attorney did that was researching this on his own. The petition was ignored, and the time line ran out on the petition. And therefore, the only way they figured they could get the attention of the Secretary of Commerce was to file a lawsuit then. And from what I understand, the length of time the lawsuit's been filed, there's not even been a reply received, an acknowledgement received from the Secretary of Commerce. So I think they're doing this partly out of frustration with trying to get some answers out of the federal system and not even getting an answer back. But other than that, that's my understanding of what's gone on so far.
Interesting. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and Madam Chairwoman, I do not disagree with what Senator Wagner said. But in any event, today it is a suit. That's clear. And the beauty of it is that there's a number of people that are friends of mine that are commercial fishermen want to turn loose this tiger that some have by the tail because they want to sign on to this resolution because they understand that this resolution is against Alaskans and Alaskan way of life. And I just a few moments ago, one of my good friends that's a staunch commercial fisherman says, have you done a couple things? And I said, yes. He said, well, I want to sign on to that resolution. And my prediction, there will be multiple others who will do the same thing because Alaskans, and I will be standing with them, will not allow this sort of thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Further questions for Ms. Long or Senator Huggins at this time? Okay, thank you very much. If you want to stand by, let's go to Rod Arno here in the audience. Welcome.
Thank you again, Madam Chairman, for the opportunity and committee members. My name again is Rod Arno. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, which is a statewide organization that's an umbrella organization representing 48 clubs, 2,500 individual members for a total membership of 10,000 Alaskans. And AOC advocates for Alaskans who participate in wild food harvest. The DIPNET fisheries in Chitna and the fisheries in the Kenai Kasilof are important sources of wild food for thousands of Alaskan families. AOC is opposed to this lawsuit that would take from Alaskans a traditional source of natural, healthy, and wild food. AOC would hope that you would pass this out and that this resolution, although resolution's only being a wish, these are two big wishes. And the first wish is that USITA would just withdraw the suit. The idea of having this suit go to the federal court to deal with these issues when some of the past answers we've got from the Ninth Circuit Court on preempting states' rights and the Submerged Lands Act of 1953 we've seen over and over again. This is extremely dangerous for the state of Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Arno? Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Somerville, Ron Somerville.
We're really not trying to occupy all your time.
It's fine. We're happy to see you here.
I'll make it brief. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Somerville. I'm from Juneau, and I am on the board of directors now of the Territorial Sportsmen here with a membership of about 1,600 plus. Virtually all of them sports fishermen, hunters, and that sort of thing. I want a couple of comments about this. One is, and I probably tend to agree, I don't know much about USITA's politics or why this was done, and Senator Wagner is probably correct. But the point is, if in fact this lawsuit were successful, it would essentially target virtually all of our resident-only fisheries would be potentially at risk. Mm-hmm. That's our subsistence fisheries throughout the interior, south central, here in southeastern. We have a lot of resident-only fisheries for personal use, et cetera, et cetera. And you can say, well, it only targets Cook Inlet, but there is a Jensen case in Cordova, which is identical to this one. So where does it stop? The other thing is, having worked here a little bit, you do have some options. And you might consider that. One is, state should be interested in this case, but they've got to intervene. They just can't file an amicus brief. What if, like in the American Rivers case, they settle this thing out of court? You've got to be a party to that out-of-court settlement. If the governor's not willing to do that, then I guess I'm suggesting ledge counsel or somebody on behalf of the legislature has to look at the options that you have available. So I'm hoping that people will take it seriously until this case is withdrawn. And, you know, to me, it's a real affront, quite frankly, when Alaskans would target and try to preempt state management when that was the essence behind statehood in the first place. So thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Somerville. Ricky Geese. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify today before the committee. My name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We're a 501c3 nonprofit fishery conservation organization on the Kenai River. I concur with the comments of the past two people, so I won't really belabor their points. But we do want to point out there is the tandem lawsuit, Jensen versus Wolf, and I would think that you may want to expand the scope of your resolution to include that lawsuit. I do agree with that it's very important for the state to intervene in both these lawsuits in case there are out-of-court settlements. I did talk to the lead attorney of these lawsuits from the Baldwin and Butler law firm at the Great Alaska Sportsman Show. He indicated that they are seeking some out-of-court settlements, such as personal use dip knitting on the Kenai River would only occur after the upper end of the escapement goal has been achieved, which is 800,000 fish. Sometimes that would allow us two or three days of dip knitting. I would give no predictability for the opportunity to go dip knitting. Currently, it's 3 weeks on the Kenai River and it's 5 weeks on the Kisilov River. And we feel that predictability is very important for people to go dip netting, plan their vacations during the summertime, and to have it have some sort of out-of-court settlement that doesn't involve the public process of the Board of Fisheries or ADF&G management seeking to impose a federal kind of takeover oversight of that. We just don't agree with. Thank you for your time.
Excellent. Thank you, Ricky. We appreciate it. Okay. Next, we'll go to Fairbanks and Mr. Byron Haley.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, I am Byron Haley, president of the Chittenden Dip Netters Association, and we strongly support SJR 22. I have been president of the Chittenden Dip Netters since 1984, and the commercial fishermen have been trying to close this dip net fishery at Chittenden and the rest of the state before I became president and ever since. And this is just another tool they are using. Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody here in the audience wishing to testify on SJR 22? Anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then public testimony is closed, and it brings back the resolution before us. Senator Huggins, did you want to add anything on the Jensen case, or do you want to wait until it comes to the floor and offer that on the floor?
No, Madam Chairman. I mean, quite frankly, I think if this resolution is going to make it through the process, it'll have to be modified after this. We can do the research today and in the morning.
Okay. All right. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, I would agree that we should expand it to, I would support certainly expanding it to include the Jensen case and any other cases out there. And if, just in terms of moving this along, if I would certainly support a conceptual amendment to do that and then maybe move it out of committee, but I'll leave it to the prime sponsor for that.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I will make a conceptual amendment because Senator Wilikowski and I are working on this together. It's one of those things that affects the average Alaskans.
Yes.
We appreciate that. So at this point, Madam Chairman, I would move that we take the essence of the Jensen versus Wolf and roll it into this resolution conceptually and have that done legally by the our alleged legal.
Okay. Is there any objection to that conceptual amendment? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, then amendment number one carries. That brings the resolution back before us. And, you know, I've had a neighbor just walked up to me last week and reminded me of, you know, how important dip net fishing is to his family. And they've got a gaggle of kids, and they literally subsist off of the fish resource this way. That's how they feed their large family in the wintertime, and so I know it affects average Alaskans, and it reminds me a little bit of the Zobel case back on the permanent fund and makes me nervous for those same reasons. So supportive, and would entertain a motion. Senator Wilikowski.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 22/R as amended out of committee onto the next committee of referral along with individual recommendations and zero attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Any objection to that motion?
No objection.
Okay. Senator Wagner, speaking to your objection.
Well, I don't have any objection to moving it eventually, but I tried to get some of the people who were involved in this that wrote the lawsuit up to get online and testify. Because, like I said, I'm not that up on the process. And we've spoken two or three times here about the process here in this committee is to hear the bill one time and then move it out the next time. So now we're all of a sudden speeding up the process just to get this thing, and it's got, I think, two more committees to go. So I guess with that, I'll remove my objection, but I think if we're going to start down a path that we hold bills on as a standard procedure, then we should follow that procedure.
Fair enough, Senator Wagner. And do you remove your objection?
Yeah, I remove my objection.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yes, Ms. Sharon Long would like to make a comment on that.
Ms. Long.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say something about the timeliness of the intervention and an intervention versus an amicus. Our drafters in Ledge Affairs said that this was filed on March 7th, and according to the court rules, if we are to intervene, it has to be done in a timely way, and they read that to mean by early to mid-May. Okay, and we're well aware of that, and that's hence the reason for expedition. But I do note, Senator Wagner, you're right, and that is generally our practice here in the committee. So with that, any further objections? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 22, as amended, individual recommendations and fiscal notes, has moved out of Senate Resources. Thank you. Okay, that brings us next then to HJR 25. Welcome to Senate Resources. Thank you. If you want to go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Casey Schroeder-Hotch, staff Representative Thomas, and Representative Thomas would be here, but he's either on the House floor or in House Finance. But he sends his apologies. HGR 25 is a pretty simple resolution. At the federal level, there is currently no blanket definition of renewable, and more often than not, they exclude hydro projects from qualifying in that definition. So HGR 25 just asks Congress to reevaluate that and include hydro in their definition of renewable.
Okay, and I think we all understand what it is. Questions for the bill's sponsors, staff, at this time. Okay, so then we'll go ahead and go to public testimony. We'll start there in Cordova with Mr. Hap Simmons. Hap?
Good afternoon, Senator McGuire and committee members. My name is Hap Simmons, and I'm representing Cordova Electric Co-op as well as Ocean Beauty Seafoods. We at Cordova Electric have been trying for a number of years to get hydroelectric facilities classified as renewable at the federal level. We've been successful in getting hydro listed as a renewable resource by the National Rural Electric Co-op Association and have it as an action item for them as they lobby the congressional delegations of all 50 states. It has been literally impossible to get federal funding for hydro in the past unless it was by a specific earmark, and it was virtually excluded from the stimulus package this year. With the current regulations and both state and federal agencies on the watch, there should be no exceptions in this resolution. It is important to remember that every hydro project is cited for its specific watershed, and each must be reviewed individually for its environmental impact, if any. These projects are not cookie-cutter projects like a coal-fired plant or a nuclear plant. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Hap. We'll go here in the room then to Ms. Jody Mitchell. Oh, you're online. My apologies. Jody? Oh, no. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator McGuire and committee members. My name is Jody Mitchell, and I'm the General Manager and Chief Executive Officer of Inside Passage Electric. And we serve the rural southeast villages of Angoon, Hoonah, Cake, Pukwan, and the Chilkat Valley, and primarily with diesel generation. We travel to DC approximately once per year to seek federal funding for projects that will reduce the cost of power for our member owners. And the last trip we made was in February when we went to visit Senator Murkowski's office. Her energy staff told us that they had tried unsuccessfully to amend the stimulus bill with respect to renewable energy for the benefit of Alaska. Had the amendments passed, our state may have been eligible for possibly millions of dollars for hydroelectric infrastructure. IPEC's residential rates last year peaked at over 67 cents per kilowatt hour with the surge in diesel prices. Obviously, federal stimulus funds could have meant long-term clean and lower-cost power for IPEC's customers. And this affects not only Southeast Alaska, but the entire state.
Excellent. Okay, questions for Ms. Mitchell? Senator Wagner.
Did our delegation, our congressional delegation, did they run into problems getting hydro approved because other people pretty much already established all their hydro projects? Is there one any interest, or was it, you know, I look at a renewable resource such as Weyerhaeuser, for instance, growing their own feedstock for their paper mills and, you know, different types of grains grown for their oil content, things like that. Something can be turned over again and again and again. Now, with hydro, you're doing that, but you're just using the water, which is basically fuel, and the hydro dam itself, it's not renewable. It's an in-place structure. Is that the problem?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, I'm not really sure. I know there's been a lot of changes in the law at the federal level that have affected hydro being classified as not a renewable resource. And I believe it has to do with the types of dams that they have constructed, which has affected fish habitat. However, in Alaska, there are a lot of precautions that are taken, of course, through the process of permitting a project that wouldn't happen anyway, in my opinion. I hope I answered your question.
I'm not sure you can. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure there is an answer to it. That's why I was trying to find out if anybody had found an answer to that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, either hydroelectric power generation is renewable or it's not. It seems to be a matter of fact. And it has puzzled me as well. You can give political reasons or other reasons for why it may not have passed, but it still doesn't clarify or explain how it's not renewable energy. And to the extent that anyone else who's testifying could enlighten this committee, we'd appreciate it. Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Tim McLeod?
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Tim McLeod, and I'm the President and General Manager for Alaska Electric Light and Power Company, serving Juneau. AELMP has provided hydroelectric service to Juneau since 1893. Some of the hydro projects currently providing energy to Juneau have been operating for over 100 years, fueled solely by rain and snow. We fully expect them to continue to produce energy for at least the next century. Conditions in Alaska are favorable for developing many new hydro projects with low environmental impacts compared to any other resource. The federal definition of renewable energy excludes hydro for the purpose of discouraging further development of new hydro resources. Perhaps there are locations throughout the country where, for environmental reasons, hydro development should be discouraged. Those concerns should be addressed individually during the permitting process rather than a broad stroke approach that discourages hydro development nationwide. Clearly, no consideration was given to Alaska when the federal government chose to exclude hydro from the benefits that are available to other renewable resources. Hydro projects in Alaska are some of the cleanest, most environmentally friendly energy resources in the world. Here in Southeast Alaska, for example, there are no alternative resources that can be developed with a lower environmental impact than hydro. In many cases throughout Alaska, the only reasonable alternative to hydro is diesel, and clearly hydro should be strongly encouraged. Under current status, Alaskans are deprived of some of the funding opportunities available for other renewable resources. Their current status may also jeopardize Alaska's ability to comply with future renewable resource portfolios, mm-hmm. increasing costs to Alaskan residents. Alaska Electric Light and Power Company supports this bill, and again, we thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Yeah, that last point, that would be a cruel irony, wouldn't it, that we could end up, depending on the regime, the change there, we could end up paying penalties or something if we didn't meet a portfolio standard, even though we had renewable energy as a part of it in the form of hydro. Okay, questions for Mr. McLeod? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, we'll go, I have three more off nets. It looks like we are Greg Mickelson. No, gone. Okay, let's go to Haynes and Tim Bolin.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Tom Bolin, Haynes Borough Manager, and I'm here with our Borough Mayor, Jan Hill, and we thank you for the opportunity to comment. Haynes Borough lives on hydropower, along with our sister city, Skagway. There are times when our hydropower is not sufficient and we have to run on diesel in the winter. There's clearly a need for additional hydropower development. We have the potential resources here, but as I have others have expressed, the limitations on federal funding hamper our efforts to develop that hydropower. To speak to the issue that was raised a little bit earlier, In the lower 48, hydropower has a bad reputation in some circles due to the fact that it very often impedes river traffic, it disrupts fish migrations, and it floods usable and productive lands. As a result of these impacts, hydro has not been viewed with friendly eyes on the part of many. What people in the federal government need to understand is that many of the hydro resources in Alaska are in fact alpine lakes that come down the mountainside and give us the ability to generate power. We do not flood usable lands, we do not impact fish migrations, and we do not interrupt navigability on streams. And so the fact that the federal government refuses to recognize hydropower as a renewable energy source curtails our ability to acquire funding to take advantage of essentially this free resource. And we would endorse your efforts to send a resolution to the federal government explaining these issues and requesting, if necessary, that they make a special exemption for localities that are working with alpine lakes. Thank you for your for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bolin. Kathleen Minky.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I live in Haines, Alaska. I've been a resident here for 15 years. And I've also lived in Colorado and I've also lived in Idaho. My background is in biology with equivalent to a master's degree in fisheries. I've followed fisheries and watershed projects probably for the last 30 years of my life. And I am in the very uncomfortable position now of contradicting to some degree my own representative Bill Thomas and my own Mayor Van Hill and my own borough manager Tom Mullen. But I think I need to give a heads up to the legislators who are not from our area regarding the controversy over some local hydroelectric proposals. And there are, in fact, high alpine lakes in the Upper Lynn Canal that could, if hydroelectric projects were located on certain specific areas where there could be serious negative impacts to Alaska's wild fish stock. And I think this also applies to other areas in the state. And what concerns me about the resolution is the total lack of any recognition of wild fish stocks in Alaska. And so I would like to propose two friendly amendments, and I'll just... One is there's a couple of places where the wording in here is very dangerous and not in the best interest of Alaska or Alaskans or Alaska's wild fish stocks. On page 2, lines 3 and 4, whereas hydroelectric energy can be developed in Alaska using high elevation lakes and run-of-the-river systems that have few or no negative environmental effects. That would better read, whereas hydroelectric energy can be developed at some locations in Alaska, because there are clearly locations where it's appropriate for these projects, and there are clearly locations where it is not appropriate. And the other dangerous language is in the resolution itself, where it says, without restriction, that the project should be supported without restriction. And this needs to be, those words just have to be struck, because that means we don't really care. We want this money for whatever industry or entity wants to put a hydropower project wherever without restriction. And so that should be replaced with, when it can be shown that negative impacts to wild fish stocks will not occur. And if those words are placed, then then you will be passing a law that recognizes that even in Alaska, even on high alpine lakes, there are locations where hydro projects should not be built. And a very specific example is in Haines, Alaska, where there's a proposal on the Chilkoot watershed, which is strongly opposed by many locals in the community, that supports four runs of wild salmon and a hooligan run, where there's a better alternative of Shuby Lake. And both our mayor, Dan Hill, who's on the Chilkoot Indian Association, and Bill Thomas have pushed for this project, which is why Bill Thomas sponsored this legislation, have pushed for the Chilkoot Lake project. And I would ask the legislators to be aware of the background information of the sponsor of this bill, and to be aware that there are a lot of people in Alaska. You just spent the last half hour talking about how important fisheries are, commercial fisheries, sport fisheries, assistance fisheries, to people in Alaska, that you be very, very careful with the language of this bill. And so I strongly support hydropower in Alaska. I strongly support it in Southeast. There are numerous locations where hydropower is an excellent choice. But the fact that this bill, this resolution does not acknowledge that there are places where the project could be a problem and could impact fisheries, and ask for support without restriction, and how that whereas up there has to be struck that says that doesn't have the words at some locations in it. It implies that we think the lower 48 has had problems, but you're never going to have problems in Alaska, and that's just irresponsible. So thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm sure I've used my 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone else here in the audience wishing to testify on HJR 25? Is there anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. We're going to take an at ease to open the wall behind us here, because we're delighted today to have a bunch of young, bright Alaska students who have joined us to testify on a bill that they have been working on regarding naming the Malamute as the state dog. And there are, I'm told, many more students sitting outside that need some room. So we're going to go ahead and take an at ease. Is back on the record, and we do have a quorum here of Wagner, Senators Wagner, French, Willikowski, and myself, McGuire. When we left off, we were on, pardon me, Senator Wagner, and it's a term of endearment, and we are on House Joint Resolution number 25, and we are told that our congressional delegation in Senator Murkowski and Chuck Klischulte, her staff, are looking for this resolution as a part of efforts they've made. So, Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move that we move House Joint Resolution 25 out of committee and on to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there an objection to that motion? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then HJR 25 carries out of Senate resources. Okay, next, in recognition of the students who are here and their patience level, that I think will come to pass here, we'll go ahead and move to House Bill number 14. And by Representative Berta Gardner. And really, it's on behalf of Alaska students, who I guess will explain to us how this came about. Is there, does Representative Gardner have a bill sponsor that would want to? Okay. Is there, okay, why don't we go ahead then and start with the children here in the audience, and I'll invite up Stephen Johnson from Palmer, Alaska, and Stefan, my apologies, Stefan, and you are from, if you just want to say your name and what grade you're in and what school you're with, and then offer your testimony.
Hi, My name is Stefan Johnson, and I attend Academy Charter in sixth grade.
Great. And what did you want to say about House Bill 14?
Well, the dog that the fifth graders wanted to be our Alaska state dog doesn't have a long history like the Alaskan Husky does. The Huskies are a more familiar dog, unlike the Malamute, because they're Balto, they're on the Sarum Run and the Medicine and places they can get to. The Huskies, they have long history, and it's just a more familiar dog to us and them, and they're strong, and they would reflect Alaska better than the Malamute.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Berta Gardner is here to introduce the bill to us. Welcome to Senate Resources.
Madam Chair, I'm Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage, and thank you very much for hearing this bill, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 14 is actually, in many ways, not my bill. It was brought to me by students in my district who've been working on it for 2 years, and they asked me, first I met with members of the school community and talk to them about the legislative process generally. And then there was one girl in kindergarten who had a conversation with her grandmother and realized that we didn't have a state dog. And the class just started the project of trying to decide on one. And they did a lot of research. They didn't set out trying to get any particular dog. They did some research. And when they asked me if I'd help them, I said, sure. And I went to the class. And the first thing I said, well, why wouldn't it be the Husky? And they gave me a lot of reasons and persuaded me that, I mean, I think their choice is a good choice, but of course it's not really about the state dog, it's about the legislative process. And even waiting here this afternoon is part of what they've learned. And it's been just a wonderful project no matter what the outcome is, but I hope that the members of the committee we'll kind of keep an open mind until they've heard the testimony from the students. And I don't know if they're online yet. I know they were waiting, but we didn't want them to clog up the lines in here.
They are.
Hey.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'll just add one thing, Madam Chair, that everything in the packet is either written by the students or elicited by them. They asked people for statements. They wrote the sponsor statement. The bill I had drafted took it to them. We had it amended. And there was one element, whether the Alaskan Malamute should be capitalized in both words or not. Ledge drafting disagreed on the House side in one of the committees. It was amended with the way the students wanted it. So that's been the process, and now they can talk about their reasons.
Question, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and thank you, Representative Gardner. Have, in the process of your bill moving along, have you talked about Alaska dogs? Because, I mean, we do, in fact, have multiple dogs that have a renowned history in our state.
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, yes, we have. And, in fact, on the House floor, there were two amendments offered, and one was to make the sled dog be the state dog, and one was to make the Husky be the state dog. And both of them were voted down. And I will add that while the Husky is very well known, as the young man who spoke before me pointed out, and beloved in this state, the Husky, I think, is honored by having the official state sport be dog mushing. And so that honors all the dogs that do that.
Senator Huggins?
The wolf. It's a pretty proliferating animal that a lot of people have around. Some are hybrids. But I mean, I think you can make the case that there are multiple dogs that have canines, if you will, that have a significant history in our state. And I would just encourage all of us to be open-minded about that. And I think the students are bringing that open-minded approach to us today. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Absolutely. Further questions for the bill's sponsor, the bill's sponsor's representative? Thank you, Representative Gardner. We appreciate it. Okay, and so what I'm going to do then is it sounds like I'm going to go to the Polaris students to explain. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, one question you didn't put in your sponsor statement, but the one dog, the lead dog that was so famous, what was his name?
Balto, to the chair.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be returned, was he not, to the state of Alaska a couple or 3 years
through
ago?
Through the chair, Madam Chair, Mr. Senator, I believe that I saw Balto in the Anchorage Museum, but I don't recall if he was on loan or returned permanently.
I think he was returned permanently. I'm not sure. Yeah, that was
we'll find out.
There was a special on TV about that. It was very interesting.
Fascinating. The whole serum run. Fascinating. Okay, well, thank you. So the Polaris students that are online want us to go to them to explain the basis. Okay, so we're going to go now there in Anchorage to Polaris K through 12, and I understand you have some students. We do not, our teleconferencing technology there is not allowing for your names to appear. So if there's a teacher in the room that could coordinate who will testify, that would be great. And if you could get as close as you can to that phone, we'd sure appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I'm one of the teachers. I'm Jamie Rodriguez, and I'm here with Carol Bartholomew and the students.
Okay.
We have five students today. In order, they are Kai Robert, Oceana Gamel Powell, Madeline Flores, Adeline Wright, and Young-Shu Wong.
Wonderful. We are looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Kai Roberts, and I'm a fourth grader at Blair K School in Anchorage. We are here today to testify in favor of House Bill 14, which will designate the Alaska nominee as Alaska's official state dog. You know that some people, and possibly some of you listening to us today, feel that the Alaska Husky should be recognized as the official state dog. Some of us felt that way too when we first started our research, but what we found about its importance in Alaska's history convinced all of us that the Alaska Mountie is the right choice for Alaska's official state dog. As far back as 5,000 years or more, they helped early Arctic settlers and the miners pull heavy sledges loaded with supplies. They assisted Arctic explorers and the miners during the gold rush. Throughout our state's long history, people needed animals who could help them, and they got all that and more from the Alaskan Mountie. The Alaskan Mountie is still around today, and its characteristics have been preserved so that, theoretically, today's Mounties are able to do the same job as their ancestors. In other words, they continue to be the same amazing dog that they were throughout Alaska's long history. The Alaskan Mountie also represents the Alaskan character. Proud, independent, and sincere, and stubborn. The Alaskan Mountie is friendly and fun-loving, just like Alaskans. The Alaskan Mountie is huge, just like Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kai. Next.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Oceana Gamble House. I am in the third grade at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute, one of the old Arctic sled dogs, was named after the Inuit tribe called Malamute, who settled along the shores of Kotkaniemi Sound in the upper western part of Alaska within the Arctic Circle over 5,000 years ago. The Alaskan Malamute has been in Alaska over 5,000 years. Archaeologists claim up to 10,000 years, 15,000 years, even up to 20,000 years, as evidenced by golden ivory carvings found by archaeologists. They show ancient Alaskan Malamute is almost identical to today's breed. Recent DNA tests confirmed the Alaskan Malamute is one of the oldest breeds of dogs. The Alaskan Malamute is known to be one of the 12 ancient breeds. The Alaskan Malamute is the only breed out of 150 breeds recognized by the American Kennel Club that is native to the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Oceana. Next.
Good
Madam Chair. My name is Madeline Flores. I'm in the fifth grade at Flores K-12 School in Anchorage. Alaskan Malamute stated that the Inuit children, while parents were out on hunts, which is one reason they make very good family pets, unlike many other northern breeds. They were so gentle that they allowed the human babies to crawl in and snuggle up with their puppies. The use of these amazing dogs was a partnership for survival.
Huh.
Travel logs of the early Russian and English explorers often reported a superior and better kept type of fort dog, kept by the Malamute people. They wrote about them being less wild, more friendly and easygoing, and capable of an enormous amount of work, both hunting and hauling. These dogs were truly amazing, impressing everyone they met. By 1908, racing dog teams was being popular. Dog sled races popped up all over Alaska. The Siberian Husky was first imported in 1908 in an effort to get a faster sled dog for racing. People continued to mix their dogs. This is the time when this concept of Alaska Husky, the beginning of today's sled dog, began to emerge, and why it has so many different looks today. As you know, dog mushing starring the Alaska Husky went on to become the official state sport in 1972. To the people who feel that the Husky should be our official state dog, we respectfully point out that they are already recognized through our official state sport. Alaskan dog mushing would not be what it is today without the Alaska Husky. However, the Alaska Husky cannot match the extremely long and varied history, 5,000 plus years, of the Alaskan Malamute. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next.
Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Adeline Wright. I am in the second grade of Clear's K-12 School in Anchorage. Long after the Gold Rush, Alaskan Malamutes continued to be valuable freight dogs. During the 1925 Sam Run Snow, about 150 sled dogs relayed diphtheria antitoxin 674 miles by dog sled in aggressive race in 5.5 days, saving the small city of Nome and the surrounding communities from a terrible epidemic. The Alaskan Malamute played a role in this important event, doing their part to carry the badly needed medicine to Nome. During World War I, Malamutes were called into service when the French government, in desperate need of support for their military troops, who had been cut off from their supplies due to the poor weather conditions and were in serious trouble, asked the Nome Kennel Club for assistance. The Nome Kennel Club sent 450 Alaskan Malamute with their sleds and harnesses to France. The Alaskan Malamute was important to America's efforts during World War II. They pulled sleds in snow-covered areas that were not accessible by other transportation. Alaskan Malamutes were also used as pack animals to carry weapons and ammunition across the frozen ground. They served as search and rescue dogs when they sniffed out mines. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next.
Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Yongxu Wong. I'm in the fifth grade at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. We ask you to set aside any biases about your favorite breeds of dogs and consider the intent behind HB 14. The Alaskan Malamute's 5,000 plus years represents the entire history of Alaska. This dog has been here since the first people arrived in Alaska. It is the first dog that was developed by the first people of Alaska. The Alaskan Malamute went on to meet and impress European and Russian explorers. Russian settlers, the miners of the Gold Rush, and American explorers following the Alaska Purchase. They participated in Arctic and Antarctic explorations, making the heroic difference in World Wars I and II, were a part of the team in the 1927 Serum Run, helped to haul massive amounts of freight and the U.S. mail to remote parts of Alaska when nothing else could get through, and the list goes on and on and on. The Alaskan Malamute has been involved in Alaska's history every step of the way. It's worked hard and has been a good team member for over 5,000 years. No other dog breed can make that claim. Please understand we are not comparing the Alaskan Malamute to any other breed or composition of breeds. We are merely stating the facts. The legacy of the Alaskan Malamute speaks for itself. The passing of HB 14 honors that legacy. It also won't cost the state a cent. The Alaskan Malamute deserves to be recognized as our official state dog. Thank you for helping to make that possible.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, do Mrs. Bartholomew or the teachers, do you have anything else to add?
Other than the fact that our children have worked for at least 2.5 years on this, they really have done the research. They've done the research, again, to teach newer students incoming. They really know their stuff, and they're correct. So we totally support them.
Excellent. Thank you to the teachers for inspiring your students, and for the students, on behalf of the Senate Resources Committee, we want to thank you for your hard work and participating in the process. And boy, the testimony I just heard, if you offered that, inserted a different topic on just about anything, you'd be compelling. And I think you'd move this committee toward a vote in your favor. So thank you for your work, and we appreciate hearing from you. Keep up the good work. Okay, we're going to come back to the room here then to finish up testimony. And when I last left off, we were going to come to Esther Erickson. Esther. If you want to go ahead, Esther, put your name on the record, what grade you're in, and what school you're with. Tell us why the state dog should be the Malamute.
My name is Esther Erickson. I live in Palmer, Alaska, and I attend Academy Charter in the sixth grade. The reason why the Husky should be our dog is because it helped carry serum medicine to kids in Nome to help the population grow. And also it has a great history in Alaska.
Thank you. Is that it? Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate it, Esther. Okay, next, Mariah Young. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Mariah Young. I'm from sixth grade, and I attend school at Academy Charter in Palmer, Alaska. And I am testifying against Malamutes being the state dog. Don't get me wrong, I love Malamutes, but I just think that the Alaskan Husky is steeped a little bit deeper into Alaskan history. Because the Husky was the dog that who pulled a sled over 1,000 miles to get medicine for a sick boy who was still in Anchorage while the medicine and the doctor who could provide it was in Nome. And Huskies were a specifically bred Alaskan dog. And they were specifically bred with thick fur to keep warm in sub-zero temperatures. And they have fur-sized paws, which work as snowshoes, pretty much. And I just think that because the first Iditarod Trail Race, which was the run from Anchorage to Nome to cure the sick boy, was called Alaska's first great race, that the Husky would probably be a nice dog to represent Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony, Mariah. Okay, next, Zachary Bloom. Mr. Zachary Bloom. Welcome to Senate Resources.
Good afternoon, Jim.
My name is Zachary Bloom. I'm a sixth grader at Academy Charter School.
Now, I think the Alaskan Husky should be Alaska's state dog because the Huskies have already been serving Alaska for a long time. The Husky ran the great race of the Iditarod Trail. Like the person, like Mariah, she said that, the person before me, she said the Huskies were bred to have thick fur and be able to make it across tough terrain. Some of the facts about the Alaskan Malamute are based on the facts of the Husky, and not all of them are true about the Malamute. People come to Alaska to see Huskies and not Malamutes. I request that you bill HB 14. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, we've got a real live battle here. It's like the Whigs and the Tories. Okay, Stephen Murphy. Welcome, Mr. Murphy, to Senate Resources.
Good evening. I'm Stephen Murphy, and I represent an Academy Charter School in sixth grade.
Great.
I think that the Husky should be the Alaska state dog because of the great Iditarod race. They saved lives and helped people heal from sickness and they are more widely known around America than the Malamute. And Huskies are specifically the Alaska dogs.
Thank you. Good job. We appreciate it. Okay, Brandy Bookout. Brandy, welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Brandy Bookout, and I'm a sixth grader at Academy Charter School. I believe that some of the information about the Alaska Malamute is not correct, and I believe that some of it is about the Husky, and I encourage you to amend this bill. What is a Malamute to Alaska? The state dog should be an Alaskan Husky. The Alaskan Huskies have carried medicine in the serum run to Nome and restored hope to all the sick and wounded. They're what people think of as an Alaskan dog and not a Malamute, as the bill says. Most people don't know what a Malamute is. Tourists will come to Alaska and want to see a Husky, not a Malamute. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, next we have Ellie Walton. And this is also a narrowed down group of students as well, so thank you to all the students here and at Polaris who would have testified if we had more time today. So, Ms. Walton, welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Eleanor Walton, and I am in sixth grade at Academy Charter School. I'm here to testify that the Alaskan Husky should be the state dog. I think the Alaskan Husky should be a state dog because when I lived in the Lower 48, when you said, like, in Alaska, if you said, I've got the dogs, Alaska, they go, oh, you have Huskies. They think of Huskies. And if we're going to have a state symbol, a state dog, shouldn't it be something that most of the Lower 48 thinks as a symbol of Alaska already? Why do we need to put another dog there? Another point is that the Alaskan Husky was bred in Alaska for Alaskans. The Malamute was it was an ancient dog that came over from Siberia with our hunters. The Alaskan Husky was bred for Alaskans, for their uses, for what they needed at the time. Even if it was bred from Malamutes and Siberian Huskies and others, it was bred for Alaskans. And that is my point.
That's a good point. Thank you, Ellie. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, Elias Stratton. Great names, by the way. All of our boring names, Toms and Mikes and Marys. Oh, it is. Okay.
Very nice to see
we
you,
We like
man.
The new generation of Alaska kid names. It really, and thank you guys. It's really exciting to have you in our committee and to see all these young Alaskans get up here and be so articulate. So welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. My name is Eli Stratton. I attend Academy Charter School, 6th grade at Palmer, Alaska. I think that the Alaskan Husky should be the Alaska state dog because I personally have an Alaskan Husky back in my house. And what we went on the coastal trail just on last Saturday, and we brought him with us, and I was riding my bike. On the way back, we tied him to my waist, and he pulled me along the whole trail. And sometimes I'll even hang on to him and go on my sled, and he'll pull me up and down hills and all around my neighborhood. I think that Alaska should have the Husky because when people drive by and they see a Malamute and they don't know what it is, they think it's a Husky because Alaska's known for their Huskies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Practical. Cole Clements. Welcome, Cole.
And may I ask the audience a question later in the...
Absolutely.
Good evening, Madam Chairman. My name is Cole Clements, and I attend Academy Charter School, and I'm in 6th grade. I'm here to testify about HB 14. I think that Husky should be the Alaska State Dog because Zach and Mariah said, that they have a big coat of fur, and they really shouldn't be, this should be down here because we've all experienced the cold weather here. So they're really nice. They really like the cold weather and all that. And, they helped a sick kid in Nome, and may I ask that question?
Yes.
How many of you have all seen a Malamute? Okay, now how many of you have seen a Husky?
Brilliant.
That kind of proves that everybody's seen a Husky. And yes, that is my point. Thank you.
We've got a future lawyer here. Stay, Cole, just a second. We have Senator Wilikowski has a question.
At your school, does your school have a nickname?
So the chairman, with Wilikowski. No, home of the Huskies.
You're the Huskies? Okay.
Yeah.
So is it a conflict of interest? So we're asking, Joe is taking pictures of you all to send back to your school. So he wants to see if you could do a show of hands for who has seen a Malamute. Okay, if you hold your hands. There you go. And who has seen a Husky? Okay, there we go. There's the visual. Exhibit A. Thank you, Cole. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, next, Logan Metzler.
Good evening, Madam Chairman. My name is Logan Metzler, and I'm in 6th grade at Academy Charter School. And up until today, I have no idea what a Malamute is. And ever since I've lived in Arizona, I've known what a Husky is. And I think Huskies have a way bigger history than Malamutes do in Alaska. The Iditarod and the Serum Run. And my grandpa, he is a spokesperson for the Iditarod, and he really supports Huskies being the state dog. And he says a lot of the mushers do too. And they're great athletes, and they're built for Alaska. And Malamutes were just brought over with their hunters. And I think Husky should be the state dog.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Metzler. Okay, and last we have Megan Thomas. Welcome to Senate Resources.
Good afternoon. My name is Megan Thomas, and I'm from Academy Charter School from Palmer. And why I think that the Alaskan Husky should be the state dog is because I've been in Alaska my whole life and never been anywhere else, and I only seen a Malamute once. And Huskies all the time. And also, there's more Huskies in the Iditarod, so wouldn't it be kind of honorary if the Husky would be able to be the state dog? So it's like another trophy to their winnings, and they're running through the cold terrain.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Thomas. We appreciate your testimony. Okay, yeah, let's give you guys a hand. Good job, all of you. And that hand was also for the Polaris students as well. And we're going to go ahead and take a brief at ease. Overlooked Sheila Martin, one last person to testify here. Sheila, are you here?
Yeah, statewide vote.
She's coming up. So the conversations, while we've been at ease, the students have created quite an uproar. This is great. There's good arguments on both sides. I think we'll go ahead and make a motion to move it out of here today, but it's late in the session and so on. And just one thought that we were talking about is, and for the Polaris 12 students, just for you to hear too, is that sometimes you bring a bill forward and it's not the goal necessarily always of the bill passing, but it's what you bring out in the conversation and the dialogue in Alaska and the debate and the healthy part of that legislative process. So if nothing else, you have sparked debate and you brought students from another part of the state out to get involved and offer testimony and counterpoints. And so that was really exciting for us to be a part of, and that's what we do here in this building. And so I want to say thank you again to the Polaris students for bringing this forward and getting so many more of your fellow Alaskans to weigh in. And I look forward to seeing at least a couple of you here in these seats someday. And hope you come back to our state and continue to participate in the process later on. So with that, Sheila, if you want to go ahead and put yourself on the record and offer your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Sheila Martin, and I'm from Palmer. I have lived in Alaska for 25 years. I'm considered by most people to be a dog person. I'm currently involved in many dog activities, including breeding, training, dog shows, obedience, tracking, agility, and other dog activities. Thus, I'm familiar with the different AKC, American Kennel Club, recognized breeds. During my years living in Alaska, I've also had the opportunity to own and run sled dogs, both recreationally and in short distance races for fun. I've also helped with several Iditarod race teams as a handler. Madam Chairman and Senators, it is my opinion that recognizing the Alaska Malamute as the official state dog would be a mistake for the state. The reason I would not use the Alaskan Malamute is breed recognition. The AKC recognizes the Alaskan Malamute as a breed. This breed is defined with specific physical characteristics and limitations which keep it separate and distinct from other AKC breeds. It presents a limited picture and does not encompass the many dogs that have been used in our sled dog history. Many other purebred registered AKC breeds have been used in sled dog racing, such as the Siberian Husky, Samoyeds, Norwegian Elkhounds, Belgian Sheepdogs, and even Poodles. And there's probably others that I probably missed. My point is that when people hear an Alaskan Malamute, they should envision a picture of an Alaskan Malamute. Likewise, when they hear of a Samoyed, they should vision a Samoyed, and so on. These breeds already have a very specific predefined breed standard. The dogs used historically and presently cannot be accurately represented by the AKC Alaskan Malamute because they have not been used traditionally as sled dogs by Alaskans. I believe that our state dog should represent the dog that has been used by the Alaskans of our past, our present, and our future. This, of course, can only be the sled dogs of Alaska, the dog that mushers themselves and the Alaskans that call them the Alaskan Husky. Alaskan sled dogs come in all sizes. They come from the 30-pound sprint dogs to the 175-pound freight dogs. These dogs are not purebred AKC-defined breeds. These dogs have been a mixture of breeds from Alaskan Malamutes, Siberian Huskies, Samoyeds, Setters, Springers, Herding Dogs, Pointers, Hound Dogs, probably some wolves along the way, and of course, more and more Alaskan Huskies. These sled dogs were, and still are, dogs that have been bred for their hardiness to withstand weather, their health, steadfastness, endurance, movement, and now speed. There are generations and generations of pedigreed Alaskan Huskies from lines like Reddington and Boozer and Butcher and Mackey and many, many out there on this from this state. You won't find these dogs in AKC stud books. These are Alaskan Huskies, bred to meet the demands of the Alaskan sled dog, not physical characteristics of an AKC defined breed. Shouldn't our state dog that has actually been used for our state sport be our official state dog? Madam Chairman and Senators, I would ask that you please consider my statement and urge you to make an amendment to make our official state dog the Alaskan Husky.
And on that point, you know, I'm just thinking in my mind, if there are any two things, we've got a state flower and forget-me-not and a bird and the ptarmigan. And so I'm just wondering if we could have a state dog of sport or of sled, a state sled dog, and a state dog that is just sort of recognized. Have you thought through any of those compromises?
Historical. I'm not sure. I don't know that the Malamutes that were used historically, were they purebred Alaskan Malamutes? Are they? I used to own a Malamute. It was a Mackenzie River Malamute. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an Alaskan Malamute. I mean, a traditional AKC Malamute. It didn't even look like an AKC defined Malamute.
Such a thing as an Alaskan Malamute? Okay.
We're talking apples and oranges which is why it's confusing, because an Alaskan Malamute to a person as myself who's familiar with the AKC, I think of a breed standard. But when I think of a Malamute that I owned that I purchased in Alaska as a Mackenzie River Malamute, she wouldn't have fit the standard.
Got it.
But I used her as a sled dog on my team, you know, 20 years ago.
Okay.
She was considered an Alaskan Husky, too, you know.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, thank you. Representative Gardner, thank you very much. I'll give you wrap up, and maybe you could address the question that I just posed as well. You know, you've got a lot of good points. Certainly in the building, the students are reflecting, I think, things I've heard. Why not the Alaskan Husky? I thought there were good points made here today. I'm just wondering if there's a way to accommodate both canines in some form or fashion in the statutes. I don't know if you've thought of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Of course, it's the prerogative of the committee to do whatever they want, but the bill does say the Alaskan Malamute. The Mackenzie River Malamute is Canadian, I would assume.
Yeah.
I don't really know. And, you know, the AKC has its own rules for how it recognizes that. And I understand the desire to consider the Husky. It was my first response to the Polaris students when they brought the Alaskan Malamute idea forward. But as the lady before just testified, the Husky is a mixed breed. And it's all different kinds of dogs, including Malamute mixed in and Labradors or whatever else.
Would you be amenable to something that says that an act designating the Alaskan Malamute as the official state dog and the Alaskan Husky as the official state sled dog or something like that?
Madam Chair, we already have an official state sport, which
right.
is dog sledding, and I think that encompasses any dog that's used in sledding. In mushing, and that would include the Malamute, the Husky, and anything else. But if I could just make a few points that I think even the students didn't emphasize as emphatically. The first hearing we had, there were 35 Polaris students, and in the interest of brevity, we asked them to consolidate and just have a few students. So each one had something different to say, but basically you know, in my mind, and this is one of the strongest things for me, is that the Malamute has a multi-thousand-year history in Alaska and is associated with the first Alaskan peoples. And I got a kick out of the testimony or the conversation on the House floor when we were talking about this bill, when Representative Jewell talked about getting married. He was from Kotzebue, and he and his new bride years ago went to Bethel. And when they arrived in Bethel, people said, oh, you are Malamutes. You're from Kotzebue. And I'd never really heard that before, but that is the Inuit peoples. But the Malamute was involved not just in mushing, and little in racing, because they're not speed dogs. They're beasts of burden. But they're talked about by Captain Cook. They're used in the Gold Rush by the U.S. military, by polar explorers. They're involved in carrying heavy loads. And they're the only AKC-recognized breed that's indigenous to North America.
Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the comments. Is anybody else amenable to this idea I'm coming up with, that we have an official state dog and we have an official state sled dog? I don't know. Senator Huggins?
Well, yeah, Madam Chairman, I guess, you know, I mean, the kids that you see here today from Academy, they didn't bring, it's, in this case, one school brought forward the idea first, and it's in the bill. But it doesn't mean that the other kids aren't as right or righter. I don't know what the right answer is, and it's not always early bird gets the worm, for lack of a better term. So, I mean, I brought forward before that this is about Alaska, and there are kids throughout Alaska, and I would just propose to us that we put it to vote to the school kids of Alaska.
Senator Wagner.
I would concur with my colleague, Senator Huggins. We get in an argument all day. I think Lathrop High School is Lathrop Malamutes, for instance.
Yeah.
And we can go around the state and find different schools with different mascots. But I don't know how much trouble it would be to put it to a vote of the school. And I don't know how we could do that. I mean, it would be an interesting process. So, but I think it's shown today that there's some dissent out there about the Malamutes and the Huskies and whatever. But I think it should go to a vote some way.
Senator French.
The Democratic way.
I think Senator Huggins has really hit on a great idea. That I'm particularly respectful of the Polaris kids that pushed this bill all the way here. And while my own personal leanings are toward the sled dog, you know, I would be very, very loath to tamper with the bill that they brought to us, even though that's a totally legitimate thing to do. I think Senator Huggins has really sort of broadened this out. We've got one school that's brought it here, another school that's flown here to testify about it. I'm excited by that. I'm thrilled to see this many kids here. It really makes me happy. And I know I speak for the rest of the committee when I say that. This is what democracy is all about. And the idea of having a day when, you know, ballots are distributed in the elementary schools across the state and having a vote, I think that's a great idea.
We discussed this when we were at recess, and we were trying to be very respectful of...
Did we go on the playground at recess?
Right. Representative Gardner and of the Polaris students who are there. But we discussed this idea in the interim that, you know, if we held the bill over, that we could come up with some method of really continuing the message and the lesson that they have instituted and getting education out to the schools and let them go through that process and vote. I don't know the way that it would be administered or not, but let me go to Senator Huggins and then Representative Gardner and then Senator Wagner.
Senator, yeah. You know, I mean, quite frankly, Madam Chairwoman, I think of the number of times that I helped man booths for student voting, and they were voting on something, some election cycle was going on, but they didn't determine who the winner was, and they probably voted about like their parents. But in this case, if it's structured correctly, how they vote will have an effect on what the state dog is. And I don't think that's all bad. I mean, these kids here and the ones that called in, because we are a democracy. So I would just highly encourage us to think about that, because it's about all the students, not just a school or a geographical area, and there would be a result of that.
So, Representative Gardner, Wagner, Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we have a judiciary hearing we've got to get to.
Okay.
Too,
so. This bill, in many respects, isn't about the dog on one level. It's about student engagement and involvement and learning about the process. And I would propose that perhaps another school may want to come forward with their own proposal, either for an official sled dog animal and see it through the process from the beginning, draft the bill and all, or might even amend existing statute. If the Alaska Malamute were to go through, then the next project is to amend it, if that's what they want to do, and they start and go all through the process.
Okay,
but to me, this seems like coming in at the 11th hour.
Senator Wagner.
We do a lot of things at the 12th hour. So. Mm-hmm. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars at the 11th hour. So this is minute compared to that. But I think the opportunity is there if we put this out for vote and say, put it out to vote for the sixth graders throughout the state of Alaska, and perhaps put a couple of different schools, maybe three schools, in charge of certain regions of the state to do the democratic process as far as putting the ballots out, marking the ballots, bringing them in, counting them. That would be a very educational process. And I'd be happy to donate a couple of $300 to that process.
Yeah, here, here. Okay, just wrote Senator Stevens, and then I'm going to go to wrap up with the teachers there at Polaris K through 12. And just be thinking about them. The question I'm going to ask you is that if the committee decides to do that, if you will continue the process and the journey that you're on in your quest for participation in your government, in democracy, and partner with us here in the state Senate, in the Senate Resources Committee, and my aide just slipped me a note that said maybe we even implement an online survey as well that can be conducted in the classroom on the part of the students. And so I'm going to come to you next to ask that question, because I know how hard you've worked on the bill. Senator Stevens.
Which is a possible way to work our way out of this, since I don't think we're in a position to hold an election or even do a computer election. It seems to me that it's something we could turn over to the Commissioner of Education. If the Commissioner is worth his salt, he'll find a way to have an election and figure it out.
I like that.
Yes.
So let me go there to Kay at Polaris and hear from the teachers.
And I think that the question is, should it go out for a state vote?
Of sixth graders or of some classroom or, yes.
Okay, we disagree, because we took 2.5 years to get all this information together, and it was not easy to get. And as you see the kids walking off the street, they mean well, they love the Husky, it's their school mascot. And they do have an emotional thing for it. We feel that historically, we can't get all of that information out in such a short time to have a vote. We also are going through this process, and then suddenly this is a whole different process. And we feel, with our studies about state law, that this isn't how you pass laws, that you don't put them out to a small group of people in the state to speak for everybody. People have had a chance along the way. They've had a chance to look up our research. It's been out there. So we very respectfully object in that we just need them to work. It honors everybody, not just the special few who are mushers, not just the special few who like sled dogging and so forth. This is everybody since the first person stepped foot on Alaskan soil. This is the most inclusive way that you can go to get the Malamute as a selection, and we have to stand behind that. Our research shows that over and over and over again, and we keep finding more and more and more information to support that.
Okay.
So,
thank you. So I'll bring it back to the committee. I've heard, I think, from the three members here. Is there any additional thought? Anybody wishing to make Senator Wagner?
And we don't need to get into this, but I disagree. Ma'am, I got to tell you, this is the way the legislative process works. And sometimes when you put a bill in the hopper, when it comes out the other end, if you hadn't tracked it, you wouldn't even recognize it as yours. And that is the democratic process. And the worst thing you can do is, and I'm finding this out a lot, the worst thing you can do is become emotionally attached to a piece of legislation that's going through the legislative process, because it just destroy your ego.
Yeah, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Madam Chairwoman, that's precisely right. In education this morning, we looked at a bill that had been multiple pages. It was less than one line. It had been boilerplated down. You couldn't even recognize, what it once upon a time was. But, quite frankly, we have a there's an initiative process where quite often things go. But, it's about our state. It's about our kids. And make a determination. And in all due respect to each of the kids that's worked hard on this, there are lots of ideas. We heard some of the contrasting ones today. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and hold the bill for now.
Can I say one more thing?
It's Wednesday. Yes.
Okay. Hi, Senator Huggins. Was that who said that? We do understand that. We know that things can happen to your bill. However, I have to keep telling you, the intent of the bill is the whole history of Alaska. We don't vote on that. You guys are our representatives, and we feel that we've gotten through this far because people have understood the intent of the bill. The intent is to honor not just the dog. It's the dog that has been here throughout the entire history of Alaska. It's not just a sport. The sled dog, the Husky, is part of the state court. You are our representative, and we don't vote on these things. We do trust that you'll vote right. This is the intent is Alaska's history and honoring that, not the blood dog, and not just dog mushing, which is our state sport, and that's where the Husky, bless its heart, this wonderful dog, the Husky, is recognized. But think history, think 5,000 years. Some archaeologists have even claimed up to 20,000 years. And that we hope that you can understand that.
We do, and it's a bill that has just come to the Senate. This week, we've been moving it along rapidly in recognition of your students' work, so you should know that. I don't think I can recall a bill moving this quickly, and I know it's because of the good work of your students. So let me just take one brief at ease here real quick. And it's alive and well. It's the first hearing in this committee, and we look forward to the continued dialogue and appreciate all the hard work and the voices from all of you here. And I've been a part of most of the battles, not the one on the ptarmigan or the forget-me-not, but I have been on the state seal and the state flag song, and I can tell you I've never seen more emotion than on those two bills and items than I've ever seen. So it does bring out emotions, people's notions of their state. Thank you to all the students. We're going to set it aside for now. I'd like to go ahead and just Senator Kelly's bill. You want to just bring it up so that we have the ability to hold it over? Okay. Yeah. Just so that if you can just literally read the basic premise of it to us.
Sure.
Brief at ease.
serves as a notice to them to cease and desist those efforts.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll go ahead and hold this bill over and appreciate your testimony.
What are you talking about?
Are we done?
Yeah. No, we're adjourned.
Oh.
Sorry.